powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
We haven't quite heard how this sounded on the radio yet. I like how some of these cuts are labeled. Marshawn got stuffed on 4th and inches. Ah! That one really hurt. All right, well, let's start with some more positive stuff from last night.
With Lynch in the backfield, Moore in motion from left to right. The turn, the hand to Lynch. Lynch bounces up into the line of scrimmage, gets a push across the 40, out to about the 43, 44-yard line. A nice push, and Marshawn Lynch showing a little bit of pop, running the football and getting in behind the big guys for a 5-yard gain.
The fact that he hadn't played all year long made me think that, you know what, maybe this guy's, there's no wear on him, no recent wear on him, on his body.
Correct, yes.
Right now, I know that a lot, we talk about guys being in game shape and taking hits, and he hasn't done that, obviously. But I thought, you know what, at least he's not hurt coming into this game.
Yeah, and I think the big question for this game was always going to be how he feels today.
And after the game, he said, I'm going to feel great. Like, my body feels good. I'm not banged up at all. So, to me, that was very positive. But on that first carry, he looked like he was shot out of a cannon. He was so excited to get that ball. And he almost, like, wanted to jump on the back of Mike Iupati.
Yeah.
He was so anxious to get going and get downhill. It was really fun to watch.
Debo.
Two of the defensive linemen in there on 2nd down and 4 as Mostert stays in the backfield. Play fake to him. Samuel gets the end around to the left side, and he's got a lot of running room down the sideline. Spins out of a tackle, and he goes in for a touchdown. The Seahawks were wildly out of position on that play. A 30-yard touchdown run on the end around as Samuel, who has done this before to other teams, you know the Seahawks had to see that on film, but he ran out to the left side, Dave, and there was nobody out there. And then the one person who could have a chance to make the tackle couldn't.
In my...
Touchdown. That one got reviewed?
It did, yeah.
Yeah. In my notes for this play, I wrote, tackling is less than stellar.
Definitely.
Yeah. Pursuit,
not
being
present.
Assignment sound, it was just all over the place, and Kyle Shanahan was really toying with our defense at that point.
Was it me, or did the 49ers, especially early in the game, look like they were 2 or 3 steps faster than they were in the first meeting?
I think so. Yeah, I mean,
look
like
Samuel's a fast guy.
Yeah,
so that may have sort of slanted the way I was looking at the game. But they just looked like they were faster than they were in that first game to me.
The Seahawks in the first game, they came out, they were the aggressor.
Yes.
They set the tempo of how the game was going to go. The 49ers, they came in this game too, and they were the aggressors in this one, no doubt.
Curtis, what'd you think of the 1994 uniforms they used last night?
Ooh, yeah. I
kind of liked it.
I don't think that's a good era of 49er uniforms. Like, mid-90s to the, like...
2001 or 2,
yeah,
3.
Yeah, where they, like, got really dark red and, like, black. Didn't like it.
Like, blood red?
Yeah. Garrison Hurst era.
Yeah, they won a Super Bowl with those,
They did. They did. They won 4 more without them.
That's true. Very good point. All right, I'm going to skip over Marshawn getting stuffed on 4th and inches. What do you guys think?
Please do, because I really don't feel like going on a tangent about how Tyron Swoop should never have to block Nick Bosa.
There
I don't want to do that.
Third quarter, we go.
And off again to Lynch. This time left side breaks it through the middle. Down to the 30. Down to the 27-yard line. Beast mode explodes right upfield. A big first down run on 2nd and 2. And Marshawn Lynch just runs right past everybody for 15 yards and a first down.
Was it me? Did I catch some people in tears in the stands last night after those carries?
I believe it.
A couple of people maybe weeping to themselves at like, oh my God.
The 8 run.
I can't believe what I'm seeing out there.
The 8-yard run and then the 15-yarder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
It didn't bring emotional. It didn't bring me to tears, but I was fired up.
What were you eating last night?
What was I eating?
Yeah. About dinner time for you, friend.
Yeah,
right?
No, it was great dinner. We had we were over at the in-laws' house. We had
mad when you watched.
We had ham. We had potatoes. I mean, we were eating right.
Okay, so you had a full stomach.
Absolutely.
Right. That sounds great.
Meat and potatoes.
Hey, you were in the press box. They feed you guys pretty good.
Yeah, I had a protein bar and 2 cups of coffee.
Oh.
What did I have? I don't remember eating anything. Tyler Lockett probably ate something before the game.
Clock is ticking down. Russell gets the snap just before it ticks away. Russell steps up in the pocket. Looks. Still looking. Now he fires. Ball is caught. Touchdown, Seahawks. Tyler Lockett uncovers at the last possible second, and Russell drills it in the back of the end zone from 14 out, and the Hawks are on the board.
That was just the score that they needed at that point. Later on in the game, when it was like 19-14, and when they came back that last time for that third touchdown, I didn't know where that was going to lead. But at that point, had that not happened, this game isn't even in question.
And it
later
was
on.
So correct. Close to not happening, yeah. Because Russell Wilson was tiptoeing yes. that line of scrimmage.
When he threw it, I was like, yeah. Oh no, he passed the line of scrimmage.
It
I thought for
right
sure it was going to call back, but the review, his back leg
isn't
was
it funny the
behind
way,
the line
what,
of scrimmage.
Though? Isn't it funny the way that rule is set? Like, if you take the football and you're a running back, and even a shred of the ball crosses the goal line, that's a touchdown. But unless your entire body goes over the line of scrimmage, it counts.
Yes, it is a strange
so
rule.
So the way that rule is worded is odd.
It is, but I am so grateful for it because it led to that touchdown.
Today, Seahawks fans should be like, I love this rule.
That throw and that catch was ridiculous. Like degree of difficulty, all-time high. Like the throw was incredible. The catch was incredible. No room for error.
My only complaint is that it took a long time for Tyler Lockett to see as many targets.
I fully agree with you on that.
Kyle Juszczyk.
Yes.
You got it.
Nailed it.
Play fake to Mostert. Garoppolo has time. Now he's going to throw. Got a man out there. It's Juszczyk who makes the catch, being chased down and finally run out of bounds. As he got behind Michael Kendricks, and Kendricks stays down on the far sidelines after making the tackle. He grabbed his knee. He's going to limp off the field. But a great play fake held everybody near the line of scrimmage. And the fullback, Juszczyk, who is so valuable to this 49ers team as a receiver and a lead blocker, makes the catch down the sideline for a 49-yard gain.
I kind of, other than Kittle, don't you wish you could grab him from the 49ers?
Juszczyk? Absolutely.
Other than Kittle,
Debo Samuel.
He's fast. He's fast, but I think we have a use for Juszczyk. Like we've got Lockett. And Metcalf and
Juszczyk is such a dynamic player in both the run and the pass game, and he creates a lot of mismatches in terms of, you talk about personnel, they're able to use their heavy personnel and still be dynamic in the passing game because Juszczyk is such a good pass catcher. I mean, Kendricks didn't even think that they would run that type of route with him. All it was an inside fade. It was just a go ball. And Kendricks just stopped playing at that point. Two bad things. One, that 49ers responded immediately with that 49-yard gain. And the second thing was Kendricks hurting himself trying to tackle him at the end of it. Those two things, two tough losses, two tough blows.
Marshawn Lynch diving.
Two tight ends, single wide out is Lockett. Marshawn in the backfield. Marshawn goes up over the top. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Beast mode does it again. Welcome home, number 24 from 1 yard out. It's like old home week, and Skittles come flying out of the stands.
Did they have to delay the game for a second to get the Skittles off the field?
Yeah, they did.
They said something about that on the broadcast because there were so many Skittles in that area of the field that they had to delay the game.
The crowd was absolutely insane.
I bet. All right, we got to at least acknowledge this guy a little bit.
Four-man rush by the Niners. The handoff inside to Homer. He finds some running room, makes a man miss in the secondary, and has a first down run inside the 35-yard line before DeForest Buckner, the big defensive tackle, finally jumped on his back. A 13-yard gain.
I think people wanted to see more of Marshawn Lynch, so early on there was some critiques about just the number of snaps that Homer was seeing. But even then, I think you have to be really impressed with what he's doing. I think
definitely.
If you take that out, if there wasn't a sentimental attachment that fans have to Lynch, you, I think, would see that Homer had a really, really solid outing, especially for his first start.
They played Lynch the right amount, and leaning on Travis Homer in this game was the absolute right call. He played an incredible football game. You go back and watch the film. Travis Homer, he was awesome. He was explosive. He was decisive with his cuts. And the other thing that really impressed me about Travis Homer was how much of an asset he was in the passing game.
Yeah.
Getting five catches for 30 yards. I mean, very, very sure-handed. I mean, he's a good one.
After a day in which the Seahawks really had just a terrible defensive performance, usually what happens is they rely on 2 to 3 very good plays, 2 to 3 big plays per game, and that excuses the bad things like bad tackling or whatever. At 26-21, they did not have any of those plays until this.
Under center Garoppolo, play fake, end around, coming near side Samuel. He's got running room, but he's tripped up and dropped on a great open field tackle. And now there's a flag down near the numbers on the Seahawks, near the Seahawks sideline. A great play, by the way, on the tackle by Shaquille Griffin.
If he doesn't make that tackle and they get a first down there, we don't even get a chance to score. That was the biggest defensive play of the game.
Fully agree. Shaq Griffin really struggled in coverage last night, but he showed up big time on a couple of those run plays.
All right, John Ursua, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here.
The Niners have blitzed almost every play in this drive. Let's see if they do it again. Manning up. Blitz is coming. Russell scrambles right. Brooks throws. Ball is caught. First down. Inside the 1 yard line. Are you kidding? John Ursua gets the ball back inside. Inside the 1. An 11-yard gain.
All right, and Russell's waving George Fant. Get up, get up, get up. Get to the line. He gets there. Spike the ball. Then all the confusion we've just gone through. A bunch here. And then they get called for the delay of games. And now they're back 6 yards. And then they try to hit Hollister in the end zone. There's no PI called, so they get one last shot here.
Russell from the shotgun. Keep your eye on Hollister in the flat. The throw inside. Hollister makes the catch. Did he break the plane? Did he break the plane? The ball came out, but the clock is ticking down. Nobody can stop it, and the 49ers are going to win at the goal line. Unless Hollister broke the plane.
After a year. Completed pass receiver was down short of the goal line.
Oh, well, I thought he was down short of the goal line. That would have been just one. We were one miracle short at that point.
And it was the same play they ran against Tampa Bay earlier this year to success, obviously, because Hollister caught that one for a touchdown. Dre Greenlaw afterward gave his explanation of kind of what he saw and kind of broke it down from his point of view. So, yeah.
Man.
Four downs.
Let's do it.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Forgive me. All right, here we go. Why did Pete Carroll sound so encouraged this morning? Did he sound encouraged with Danny and Gallant?
He did. He did sound encouraged. I think, obviously, there was some disappointment about how the game went, obviously. But, you know, looking forward, I think Pete Carroll came out and said that he was encouraged by a lot that he saw and is encouraged by what they can do moving forward. And part of that reason is you saw this group make adjustments in the second half and come alive. And the offense nearly going 4 for 4 in terms of offensive possessions, getting into the end zone. The defense, they played timely. They got timely stops. They weren't perfect in the second half, but they got timely stops to get them in a position to go win the game. Travis Homer, a rookie, steps up. Marshawn Lynch successfully incorporated into the game. So for me, when you look at this, and for Pete Carroll, I think there was a lot of negativity and a lot of things that you were curious about the Seahawks being able to respond or overcome, injuries being one of those, and they stepped up to the plate, and they were able to overcome a lot of that, and I think that they're going to get healthier as they're moving forward here in going into Philadelphia.
I know a lot of people have texted in, and they're sick of Pete just taking responsibility for things like the delay of game and moving on, but believe me, at least he takes responsibility. There are a lot of coaches in this league who don't. Mm-hmm. They try and just, you know, somebody will ask them the question, and they'll try and intimidate that media member into not asking any follow-up questions, yep. And they'll just blow past it. I have no respect for that whatsoever. At least Pete took responsibility.
That's me all the way. I mean, there's nobody else to turn to. We need to get that done.
I thought it was just going to play. That's me all the way.
That's what I thought it was, too. Next.
That's me all the way. There's nobody else to turn to.
Stacey, what was the atmosphere in the locker room after the game? That's just me.
Me all the way.
That's me all the way.
That's me all the way. It was far from the worst locker room I've been in, which might have been like a loss to Washington when Blair Walsh was still here. That one was pretty awkward. I wasn't here for Super Bowl 49, yeah. So thankfully. No, I think there was a bit of an aura of like disappointment, right? Like there were moments where Dwayne Brown was in there. There was a moment when I looked over and he and Russell Wilson were chatting together. So I'm sure that especially among the older veterans, they're probably discussing like, you know, there's some serious issues that need to be ironed out. And that's kind of been the tone from both Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright in some of these, that they sound a little more, not disheartened, but kind of serious after a loss. It's not that younger players don't take it seriously, but I think these guys just know what it takes. And that's why you have veteran leaders, because they're like, all right, time to snap out of it. We need to get serious. And so that's kind of the tone that they start taking. So I think the fact that they've got a playoff game clinched helps. I think they know they've still got a shot.
Oh, God, if they had been eliminated,
oh, then
the
it would have been a completely different feeling.
Death.
Completely different. But I didn't get the feeling that anyone was, like, sad. And I don't think any player is ever fine with a moral victory. I think every athlete wants to win every single time. But I do wonder if getting that close to it made it a bit easier to swallow.
Just in the moment.
Yeah.
Just
I mean, I don't know for sure, but it didn't feel like a sad locker room. It felt just kind of disappointed, but also eager.
Does the media ever misinterpret quiet in the locker room as melancholy?
Sure.
Sometimes people just need to sit down and shut up.
People
for a
need to
bit
process
and
it.
Not talk about things.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree, and that's why I think interviewing in locker rooms after losses are tough, because sometimes there are players that are still processing it. So sometimes players are upset or angry. Other times they just don't really want to talk, and you can kind of tell. And you're like, well, I mean, you know, you're looking at a guy that let a touchdown slip through, and you're like, do I go ask him what happened? He knows what happened
ago,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he did. So those interviews are always awkward but important. But yeah, I think sometimes it gets misinterpreted.
Hey, Shaq, what'd you see on the play?
Yeah.
Thanks. How did Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer play last night?
I was very impressed with Travis Homer. I thought he looked great against the Arizona Cardinals, and he responded with a big game. I mean, 10 carries, 62 yards, 6.2 yards per carry. I mean, that's really impressive against a very good San Francisco 49er defense. And he was really strong in pass protection. He was great in the passing game, coming up with a couple big catches for first downs on the two-minute drive and throughout the game, coming up with some couple big third downs. So 5 for 5 in the passing game. To me, what he did was he established trust. He established confidence from his into his quarterback and also the coaching staff with his performance. And Marshawn Lynch, man, I'm excited to see him continue to get carries, because I think he's going to get better and stronger with every game he plays.
Next. I'm supposed to be saying down here, by the way. I'm screwing up
fourth
the segment.
Down.
Fourth down.
Fourth down. What does Quandre Diggs' return mean for the Seahawks? He's coming back this week?
It's everything.
Pete was very optimistic. He said he was told this morning that they'll have him back.
All right.
They need to have him back. I don't know if you remember the conversation we had a couple weeks ago about Richard Sherman and his willingness to play through injuries, and that the guys in that locker room at the time, that they almost kind of bullied each other into playing. This is one of those games where you got to have Quandre Diggs back. You have to have him back and playing. And even if he's 70%, you need him back there. And I think for Quandre Diggs, he is a guy that gets everybody settled down. He's a guy that really understands how offenses are trying to attack. He knows how to shorten windows. So from that standpoint, he also brings physicality to this defense. So he's a big factor for this team.
You know, that thing about Sherman and they almost bully each other into playing, that's one of those eternal sort of football questions, because we talk so much about player safety and injuries, and yet there is this macho issue that never gets dealt with of man to man in that locker room. Hey, you better be out there, man, because this is a big game and we need you. I don't care how hurt you may be.
Yeah, there it's a fine line, right? It's a fine line that you play. And as a player, you want to be there for your brothers. You want to be there for the guy next to you, and,
right,
and you want to contribute. So sometimes that happens to your detriment at certain points, but oftentimes guys in this league, they're not going to play if they're not capable.
But they also play for a coach who, even when you're listed as doubtful, will be like, I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play.
He looks
There's
good.
Always like a little bit of pressure from Pete Carroll.
Of course.
Luke Wilson, he's doubtful, but I think he'll play.
You're going to talk positively, and you're also going to put it in that player's ear that, hey, you're okay. you're going to be able to make it out there. And sending those vibes his way, hopefully we can see him out on the field making plays for this defense because they need Quandre Diggs.
What is on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
I think I'd be more interested in this game if it were basketball than football. Right? I mean, number 9, Florida, against number 24, Virginia.
One of my former coaches, Bronco Mendenhall, there at Virginia.
Oh, yeah?
This
game isn't in, it's the Orange Bowl, but it's not in the Orange Bowl. It's in the Miami Gardens.
Yeah. Hard Rock. Yeah.
Pro Player Stadium.
Pro Player, right, where they're playing the Super Bowl this year.
It is.
All right, that's at 6 o'clock on 710 ESPN Seattle. Who's going to win that game? Any picks?
I would pick Florida in this one. I think that they overmatch Virginia from that standpoint.
Don't let Ray Roberts hear you say that. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Pete Carroll on Danny and Gallant this morning, explaining himself. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
In the midst of all that chaos last night, was anybody else curious as to why they did not review the no-call on the PI where Hollister was involved?
No, I don't think anyone else is talking about that.
Nobody?
Mm-mm.
Not one person?
Just you, Tom.
Just me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey, guys, you know, one thing I haven't heard anybody talking about today.
One thing no one's mentioned.
Nobody has mentioned until me.
Kind of like a no call back there, don't you think?
Yeah, shouldn't somebody be talking about that?
Someone should be talking about this.
All right, so let's talk about it. Why didn't they booth review that play? And if they had, what do you think would have happened?
Well, they did review it. So Senior Vice President of Officiating Al Riveron spoke with a pool reporter after the game and said, this is a long explanation, so I'm just going to take the two key parts. They did perform a review based on what they saw. They did not see enough to stop the game. That's the first part.
Okay, so the review was happening like as the replays were going, as we were
presumably
watching replays,
yes.
They were
so,
doing that the same.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. This wasn't after the fact. It was during the game. They did not see enough to stop it. They also felt that Hollister came in and initiated contact on the defensive player, nothing that rose to the level of offensive pass interference.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. And then the defender braces himself and has contact on the receiver, but nothing that they felt rose to the level of a foul.
All right, let's start with the first part, because the second part is ridiculous. Why was that play not, I'll use the word, egregious enough to stop the game for?
I think that, in my opinion, I think the standard for when you stop the game changes depending on the situation for refs. I think that the DPI, or just pass interference rules in general, are too subjective sometimes, because that's what it is. It's rules that we made up for a game that we invented.
It's subjective, but the thing is, the game is on the line at that point. Take an extra 10 minutes if you want.
I think there's Well, I think that they feel like there's no winning. There's no stance they can take in which they're not the bad guy, so they just do hands off and they don't interfere late in a game and they just let it play out.
Yeah, there is. There's absolutely a stance where they can get out of there without criticism. Get it right.
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing.
No, I know.
I think this.
Stacey, you're the messenger here.
I'm the messenger.
I want you to go back to these officials and tell them what I'm saying.
It's absolutely absurd that there was a failure in breakdown in this PI situation, because the second explanation of Riveron that, oh yes, no duh that Hollister didn't create offensive pass interference. He was establishing his position and trying to box out the Mike linebacker. So now you've got the position set. You've got the initial contact, and then you've got Fred Warner, who is trying to
hold
his arms down. He's got his left hand wrapped around Hollister's shoulder pad, and Hollister can't reach out for the ball. How does that not impede his ability to catch the football? The ball in the air heading to Hollister, and he's barely able to get his arm out. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't buy this. It's one of those things where you look at it and you think, I could see how, based on the paragraph long explanation you gave, I could see how someone would see this and write that explanation down and say, this is what I saw. It's just not living in a reality that everyone else, like 9 times out of 10, this is called DPI.
In
the first quarter of this same game, I bet that would have been called defensive pass interference.
Yeah, I agree.
It's And they did. The very first play of the game, they called DPI, and it was a very similar type of route. It was a similar type of grabbing. To me, it's just refs being scared in the moment to make the call, and then having this farce of a rule of being able to challenge pass interference and have New York be able to replay the pass interference and get it right. And they don't want to do it because they don't want to hold any of the refs accountable. All they want to do is uphold the original call.
Yeah, who cares about holding them accountable anymore? Like, you're going to hurt their feelings? We're way past that.
It's all about PR for everything. The rule in itself for this year for the review was established solely to make people happy after the debacle that was the game between the Rams and the Saints. And then they didn't even uphold it after like week three because they probably didn't expect as many coaches to challenge it.
It is.
In this case, it wasn't.
In this case, it wasn't even a coach's challenge because it was under 2 minutes. So it was a booth review.
Okay, so wait, let's back up then. Do you think that they would be more likely to do a booth to overturn that a booth review, essentially, or a coach's challenge?
I think they would. I think that with a booth review, I am completely guessing. My personal opinion based on no evidence, because you don't always know when a booth review happened. But my opinion would be they'd probably be more likely with an actual coach's challenge. They didn't really overturn much after week three. There were a lot of failed coaches' challenges. They didn't do much of anything.
If that had happened with 4 minutes left and Peter challenged it, I would not have expected them to overturn it because they never do.
But I think they also try to be really careful and just let it play out in under 2 minutes, and that's when you would have the booth review. So I think they really try to just kind of swallow the whistle, don't say anything, and let it play out and be really careful. Again, I think this same play happens in the first quarter, and it's a different story.
Who was the official that everyone was talking about that he immediately said that that was a pass interference, that they should have looked at it?
Oh, Terry McCauley.
Yeah.
In the booth.
Yeah, he was adamant. He was like, yeah, absolutely, that's a pass interference.
He did. I don't know. But, you know, he's not in on what's happening on the field, between the field and New York anymore.
True.
So he doesn't know.
No, he doesn't. But that's a very rare moment where I've seen a referee that is in the media that has actually gone against what the call is and called out the referees. Usually they just have each other's backs and just regurgitate that, it was the proper call.
By the way, I agree with what Salk said before. He may have said it off the air. If it were up to him and he were wearing the stripes, and if I were wearing the stripes, I wouldn't call any of that stuff pass interference. I want them to play.
Yeah,
I realize that my thinking is probably on this issue is 20 years past where it should be. But by the standards of 2019, that's pass interference, period.
And isn't it a problem if two people see the same thing and you and I have different opinions on it, or me and Salk have different opinions on it?
Well, yeah, but
it should be a rule that's clear and understandable.
You know what, though? If we're working by the same standard, you, me, and Salk, and Jake, I think we all agree on what the call should be there.
It's just whether or not you'd call it. But if it's breaking a rule, why wouldn't you call it?
Breaking a rule?
Well, I'm saying, like, if we all agree it's pass interference,
right,
but Salk's saying, I wouldn't call it, I would just let it slide, why wouldn't you call it then?
No. What Salk and I are saying is that we prefer a game where the defender can go in and lay in the hit or to interfere a little bit. We prefer that game. We understand, though, that in 2019, this is how they want to officiate it. So in our fantasy world, we don't call it. But by 2019 standards, I do make that call. I throw the flag there.
Okay, we agree.
Yes, we all agree, because we all know by common sense, in looking at that play, that Hollister was interfered with.
Yes.
It's not debatable.
It isn't. And that's the part that's a real shame, because that also gives you another opportunity, a couple opportunities to win the game, and the ball is back on the 1 yard line again.
Right. All right. We were going to get to Pete Carroll there, but we didn't. So we're going to try to get to him around the corner here. 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
At the end of the day, and we'll get more into this tomorrow, but what shook out after that loss, right? What does it actually mean to the team? Are the guys on the team more confident going forward because, you know, at the end they were able to prove that they could come back, that they have more of a chip on their shoulder. We're facing the Eagles, not the Vikings. All this stuff sort of mixed together. How does it make everybody feel going forward? Here's Pete Carroll on with Danny and Gallant this morning talking about confidence.
Well, I feel good about our ability to go on the road and go play football, you know, go play really well, you know, under those circumstances, not even, you know, discarding the fact that we've already been there, you know, in Philly. So that it'll help. I'm sure that, and it was a nasty day when we were there. It'll probably be nasty again. So I'm not worried about any of that stuff. And I think that's a good part of us. I think we're a mentally strong team that we believe, and we know that we can do stuff and we can do all kinds of special things.
If Pete Carroll can't coach this team to be mentally strong when that's his biggest strength is coaching up young men to be mentally strong, then that's a failure on his part. I think that they will, whether they win or lose this game, he will have succeeded in coaching these guys up to at least be mentally ready after that loss last night.
I think he'd consider himself a failure for that. I think that I think something like that is something he'd be more disappointed in that he couldn't get done than almost anything.
Right,
else.
If they go out there and they just look defeated because of what happened,
I think he
the
would
week
be
before,
very, very disappointed and disheartened for something like that, as opposed to someone makes a mistake.
Do you think he would quit based on that?
No, I think though he would question himself and question whether he did something wrong, question his own methods.
There's no doubt, and especially with how good they've been on the road, and that's kind of been their mantra, right? Is we're on the road and we just kind of develop this other mentality. That's what players and coaches, that's what they've been saying. As to one of the reasons why they've been so successful on the road, and to not capture that again would be highly disappointing.
Quit. That's what I do. When the going gets tough, I just quit.
Same.
I bail out.
Same.
Wrestling career holds up to that.
That's right.
Think of the athletes we could have been, Tom.
That's right. I was 0-3. I said, Dad, I want to quit.
You could have been 0-15.
He would have been so much prouder.
Way to quit.
That's right. Exactly. Dad, I want to quit. Go ahead, son. We're still proud of you. Update on Quandre Diggs.
They're telling me now today that he's going to be ready to go this week. He was running and cutting, but not really fully able to explode. But there's I'm being told by the trainers already that they think he can go. So we'll see. You know, he still has to make it through the week.
Such football language. He was running, he was cutting, but not ready to explode.
I like how you broke it down.
Yeah, you kind of made it a song.
It was
like sing song.
He wasn't ready to explode.
To me, that's fantastic news that the trainers already on Monday are saying that Quandre Diggs has an excellent chance to play. That's big-time news. They have to have him out there. It's all hands on deck. As many healthy hands as possible.
I still wonder if he's trying to kind of stifle expectations for it, because after the game last night, he said the decision on Quandre Diggs would probably still be made late in the week.
Possibly, but he did say that also about, remember last week he had that same tone about Clowney and Ziggy and those guys, and then Monday he came out with a different tune. So maybe there's a workout that happens between the player and the training staff Monday morning that gives him an extra update on the injuries.
He was running, he was cutting, but not ready to explode.
And hopefully he's ready to explode by the end of the week.
What's that long jacket song? That's what that sounds like.
A short dress and a long jacket.
That's what that song sounds like. He was running, he was cutting, he was ready to explode.
Stacey and I always crush a cappella, and you guys look at us like, we're crazy. What's going
on?
Yeah, but come on, I'm never going to know these songs. You guys do a great job with it. I'm not saying.
Thank you so much.
Especially Stacey over here.
Especially Stacey.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll agree with that.
But I just don't know. I'm disconnected, as they say.
Kyle, you nailed this Christmas.
And this Christmas!
Yes.
Woo! Stay tuned for more. We're coming out with our spring album soon.
Okay. Did you guys sing Christmas carols last Monday when I wasn't here?
Did we?
No, we
should have.
We thought we might have to.
I'd like to apologize for the listeners for that.
For not singing Christmas
carols?
For not
singing Christmas. Not for what just happened. You're welcome for that.
Travis, did I say that right?
You said Kravis.
Kravis?
But Travis, we knew where you were going.
I got the vibe of who you were talking about, Tom.
Kravis Homer last night. Very impressive, according to Pete Carroll.
This is the same guy we've seen since he got here. I mean, I said that to you before, and you guys haven't seen as much as we have, but he is a downhill, aggressive, really explosive kid, and he's tough and his mindset is good. You know, he's leading the punt team. You know, I mean, he's done a lot of things for us all season long. So it's not a surprise at all. We just need to get him out there, you know, and he's a good player. And you can see why. He's got such a good burst and he attacks so well. He's going to be really good in the playoffs too. I'm not worried about him one bit and not even concerned about him at all, other than he just takes some colossal hits and delivers some colossal hits too, you know. So he's tough as nails. He's at 200 pounds. He hits you as hard as he can.
He's 200? How tall is he?
5'11".
Really?
He didn't look 200 to me.
Yeah, he didn't look that big out there. He's not a big dude, but
he's a tough player,
he's
though. He's aggressive.
He's 200 pounds.
For sure.
You think he was smaller
listed
than that?
Listed at 5'10".
He's listed at 5'10"?
I heard 5'2".
Yeah, 5'10".
5'2", 200?
5'2", 200. He's a power back. He's a fullback.
Exactly. By the way, when Pete said, what did he say? He's a downhill runner. I wanted to make this one of my three questions at some point, because I heard whoever it was in the broadcast last night talking about somebody being a north-south runner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can understand running north, like you run forward. I can even understand a south runner. No, I can understand east-west, like Le'Veon Bell or Barry Sanders or somebody like that. Who runs south? At least on purpose.
Longway Jones.
It's a great point, Tom.
Like Russell Wilson sometimes gets caught in a scramble for he goes back, you know, 20 yards or whatever. But he's not purposely doing that. Well, they don't say
we got a loss
report.
Of 20 again for Travis Homer. He's a south runner.
We've seen Rashad Penny kind of take that southwest, southeast, you know, turn the corner type of run,
like
and
north,
then
northwest.
Starting to go.
Rashad Penny's a big east-west guy.
Yeah.
But he's not a south guy, for sure.
Yeah, like this guy runs straight to the sidelines.
You see, this guy's running straight for the opposite end zone.
God, it's so weird the way some of these analysts talk, right? What happened? Do we want to hear what happened on the delay game one more time before we get out of here, or no?
I'm okay with that.
Do you want to cry?
Can we listen to the team feeling confident in cut number five? That's what I want to know.
All right.
This was exactly in our character to be positioned to do this and to win the football game and get out of here as champions in the division. And there was nothing else in our minds until there was no time left and we're waiting for the replay, you know? And we'll take that with us and we'll move on and we'll go to Philadelphia and go see if we can get a win there and get going. Fortunately, we played a lot better on the road than we had at home, and we got to go take that with us. And with that confidence, that helps us going. You know, the fact that we're going out, nobody could be more confident than we are going out and having to win some games on the road.
Who doesn't sound confident when you got Bruno Mars playing right underneath you?
Let's go.
Dude, he could have said right there, Jadeveon Clowney not playing, Russell shredded his knee, Travis Homer's terrible. But I would have been like, you know what? They could still win.
I feel okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
I feel good right now. Why do I feel good?
Yeah, Bruno has that kind of effect on you. But I'm glad to wrap up this one from Sunday night. Moving forward, Philadelphia. Here we go. We're in the playoffs.
Where?
Let's go. In Philadelphia.
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 It's the weirdest thing in the world.
Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right. Give up. Way to quit.